This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
How many critics are out there? I think like 200.
Oh my God.
This will be over by dinner.
By lunch.
Yes.
Hi, and welcome to Happier in Hollywood, the podcast about how to be happier, healthier, saner, more creative, more successful, and more productive in a backbiting, superficial, chaotic, unpredictable, fundamentally insane world. I'm Liz Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA, and with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 19 years, Sarah.
That's me, Sarah Fain. On this podcast, we talk about being writers in Hollywood, how we balance a career and friendship, and how to survive the war of attrition that is life in Los Angeles.
In this episode, we'll answer a listener question from a television writer who's just starting out.
Yes, she got rewritten by another writer, and she wants to know how upset she should be about it.
And the answer is not at all. We'll explain why. And then we'll share why we think it's essential to always have a lot of irons in the fire.
We'll also head to the outer office and check in with our assistant, Mary, who's been doing something interesting in her spare time.
Then this week's Hollywood hack was inspired by a piece of art in Sarah's house. And finally, we'll reveal a restroom celebrity sighting, courtesy of our editor, Brad Katz. But first, Sarah, we have an update. Well, first of all, I should say you're sick.
Yes.
So your voice is a little off.
I apologize. It's a little huskier
than usual.
Sexy. Let's call it sexy.
It's sexy.
Okay.
And we wanted to tell everyone that we have finally set the date for our next Happier in Hollywood meetup. We've been hoping to have it in January, but a few things came up. So it is going to be Sunday, March 3rd at 5 o'clock, 5 to 7 p.m. at Idle Hour in North Hollywood, which is the same place we had it last time. We figured it was a great place. Let's keep it easy for everyone. Do it in the same spot. And while we're there, we're going to bring a jar and have everyone write down on a piece of paper their word of the year and put it in the jar and, I don't know, do some sort of ritual, which we haven't figured out yet. But we love the idea of sort of taking a moment to write down our words, put them in the jar in this like community of words inside the jar and just spread some good mojo.
I love that. It was your idea, and I'm just like, I can't wait. I can't wait to put explode in the jar, Liz.
Yes.
Woohoo. And then we have one more huge announcement. I'm very excited about this.
Yes, we have, drum roll please, a new logo.
Yay!
It's really cool. It looks sort of like a spotlight, like an abstract spotlight. And then the name of the podcast is in the spotlight.
We love it so much. And we're going to debut it on our Facebook group.
Yes.
And also on our website, happierinhollywood.com.
And on Apple Podcasts and
everywhere else.
Google Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. And everywhere you find our podcast, you will see this logo.
Starting today,
yes,
right?
So thank you to everyone at Cadence 13 because they came up with this new logo. And we are crazy about it. And we can't wait for everybody to see it.
Woohoo!
And we can't wait to start putting it on mugs and things.
Exactly.
You know, I like to have my logo on things.
The tote bags, that's my thing.
Yes. Okay, Sarah, let's dive into our mailroom segment where we answer questions about the business. And this was one that really resonated with us and will resonate with any TV writer out there.
Indeed.
I'm sure. Okay, it comes from, we'll keep the person anonymous. She or he says, I am an early career TV writer who was recently given my first script to write after being a writer's assistant for many years. Yesterday, I found out the network asked for the script I submitted to be rewritten by another writer. I have heard this happens a lot, but as it was my first script, it's extremely painful. Has this ever happened to you, and did you find it made it harder to get hired again straight afterwards? Okay, yes, it's happened to us. Of course.
Absolutely. It's happened to every single TV writer who's ever done anything in the history of television.
Yes. I'm sure even Joss Whedon was probably rewritten, like, at the beginning when he was on Roseanne.
Absolutely. When Sean Ryan was on
Nash Bridges.
You bet he was rewritten.
No doubt. It really is so common. And, I mean, it is unusual that the network asked.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's their impression that the network asked. Usually
right.
it's a showrunner thing. The
right.
showrunner decides who does the rewriting. Now, it may be that the showrunner really likes this person and felt bad and didn't want to say that he or she wanted it to be rewritten. And so they said the network was asking for it. Honestly, that's my guess.
That seems like my guess.
Because I've never heard of a network sort of calling and saying, hey, have John Smith rewrite that script.
Right.
But it could have happened. Either way, it's part of the process. When you're just starting out, usually your scripts do need a lot of rewriting. I mean, I had no idea how to write it. I mean, you saved us, because if it had just been me, I don't know what would have happened. You were way better at it faster than I was. But it's just like that's part of being a staff writer, and you're not even a staff writer. This was your first freelance, is that you get rewritten. I mean, that's just the process. And you might, like, if we were on staff, Jenna Bans, who we love, who created The Family and now has Good Girls on NBC and who's amazing, she rewrote everybody, including us, all the time because she had a vision for the show and she didn't know until she saw a script sort of where she wanted to take that episode.
Yeah. And as showrunners, we rewrote everybody on our staff, no matter what their level. Sometimes it was a bigger rewrite. Sometimes it was a very
small one. Was very minor.
And it honestly means nothing. It has it doesn't mean anything about how, like, we view anyone on our staff because we had an amazing staff.
Yeah.
Honestly, most of the time, it's just about time. Like, we would much prefer just
to
continue
notes.
Giving notes and let people kind of get there on their own. That's a much better way to do it, but it's the production train keeps on rolling. So when we do that, it's largely about just time constraints.
And here's what I'll say. The one way it can hurt your career is if you have a bad attitude about it.
Yes.
If you stomp around, if you pout, if you go to people and complain, if you seem hurt, if you're passive aggressive, that is a way to, like, totally kill your career.
Yeah.
If you have a good attitude, you're happy you had the opportunity, you continue to be invested and interested in the episode and read all the drafts that come out and make yourself available if you're wanted on set, which you very well may not be, but if you are, or ask if you can go to set, then it won't hurt you. So it's just, don't take it personally, which is so hard.
Right. It's very easy for us to say, don't be upset about getting rewritten on your first script. I'm sure we were. We certainly early in our career
were massively
upset.
Rewritten on our first one.
Oh, we were massively rewritten and we were upset about it.
Oh, were we upset? Yes.
You know, I mean,
I was going to say, I can guarantee, yes, we were upset and we were rewritten.
Yeah. But just know, you know, from our position now 19 years later, it's just so normal.
Yes.
It happens to everyone. It doesn't mean anything about your future.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
Yeah. And Sarah, I would love to hear from listeners who aren't writers to hear if there are similar things that happen in their careers and how do they handle it?
Yeah.
Like, it is tough to, like, have your work overhauled by someone else. But, you know, persevere.
That's right.
Someday you'll be doing the rewriting.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah, it is time for From the Treadmill Desk Of, in which we discuss what's most pressing in our work psyches. And this week, it's having a lot of irons in the fire. And this came up because you and I were discussing how we like having a lot of irons in the fire. We feel as TV writers, we need to have a lot of irons in the fire because we never know what is going to culminate in something successful.
Right, exactly. And you were saying that Gretchen has a metaphor that she uses.
Yeah, she always says it's like having a crush on two boys. Like she had a friend who, when she was in college, told her, always have a crush on two guys because then you don't get too upset about either one or too invested in either one panning out. You can always, if something's not going well with one, you can always turn to the other. And I think it's very similar to that because it's like, well, if this TV show idea isn't going anywhere or gets rejected or whatever, we can turn to this other one that we have.
Right. And it's just, you never know what's going to happen. We could get a call from the network or hear that a certain network really wants a particular kind of medical show. And we'll be like, yes, we have that.
Yes.
Or a legal show. Yes, we have that. Oh, you need a president show? Yes, we have a great idea for that. So just being prepared for that. And I also think it helps us keep our creative juices flowing.
Yes.
Like when we have a time right now when we're not solely focused on the fix, like just keeping our brains going and thinking in creative directions, it's always good.
And even when we're doing the fix, I would notice sometimes we would have creative ideas about other show ideas because it kind of relieved the pressure. It was like a little mental break from the fix to be like, hey, what if we did a show about this? And then, of course, I mean, having the podcast is another iron in the fire.
Absolutely.
It's a very different kind of iron. But again, it allows us, when we're feeling really anxious, for instance, about March 18th, the premiere of the fix, and how's it going to do and what's going to happen,
we can go at 10 p.m.
At 10 p.m. ABC, Monday, 10 p.m., March 18th. We can say to each other, well, like, let's talk about the podcast. You know what I mean? We can, it helps us.
It does. It's a pressure reliever. And I also think, like, the cream rises to the top. If you have a lot of things that you're sort of vaguely interested in, and then, like, you notice there's one that you keep going back to, one that kind of sparks the most, to steal from Marie Kondo, joy, the most kind of creative inspiration, then you start to go, oh, okay, this is the one that has something special.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and it kind of goes with our advice to people of take the meeting, always take the meeting.
Yeah.
Because, like, say we meet with a producer on a project, it could take a year for something to manifest there. So
or
it's
more.
Like, keep things going because you don't know which one is going to actually come through. In Hollywood, it is a very bad idea to have all your eggs in one basket, just on a practical level. Forget the creative. Forget all other things. Just on a practical level, you never know what's going to actually happen.
Yeah.
So you need to have multiple irons in the fire.
Now, Liz, do you think there's a danger in having lots of irons in the fire leading to a lack of focus?
I do think that's a danger. And I do think that's something you and I do struggle with. I think having a partner helps because we can force each other. Like, here's the problem. You and I do really well with deadlines.
Yeah.
So whatever iron has the most pressing deadline, and we need, like, hopefully something does have an actual deadline, that helps us. But if nothing has a deadline, you and I can get very, like, pulled in many directions and, like, have a hard time focusing in on actually accomplishing something.
Yeah. And I would imagine that if you're, like, a only person writer, like a single writer. It's like, I don't know how to...
A non-team writer.
That would in some ways be even harder because I think we also help each other focus. Like when that thing rises, when that cream thing rises to the top, we do help each other focus on that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just something to be aware of. Like, are you, is your attention getting too diffuse?
Yeah. But I would say, think about how, you don't want to have 15 irons. That's too many.
Yeah.
You know, I'd say under 5, probably. 3 to 5.
Yeah. 3 to 5 good ones.
3 to 5 good ones. And then drop things that you decided aren't going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is we drop ideas or drop projects.
God, yes.
Now, I will say sometimes we drop them for a couple of years and then they come back.
Yes.
And that can happen too.
Or we drop them because, oh, that exact idea is now a TV show.
That happens. All Ozark, for instance.
Yeah.
We had an idea that was exactly like Ozark and then there it was on Netflix. So
drop
that one. Anyway, irons in the fire, good on so many levels. And again, this isn't just a TV writer thing. I think for anybody, it's helpful to have a lot of irons in the fire. Coming up, we will check in with our assistant, Mary, who, speaking of irons in the fire, Mary always has a lot of irons in the fire, and she's going to tell us about one of them especially. But first, an ad break. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. For instance, her first job was as a movie usher, and she would walk around with a flashlight and tell people to get their feet off the seat, and I just love hearing about it. Well, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother or your mom figure's life for years to come. And at the end, you get it all put together in a book. And I know I will be so happy to have that book on the shelf and be able to open it anytime I want and read a wonderful story about my mom.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, you'll save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/Hollywood. That's storyworth.com/Hollywood to save $10 on your first purchase.
And now for our segment from the outer office, in which we check in with our assistant, Mary.
So, Mary, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, we were just talking about having lots of irons in the fire and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And you have a lot of irons in the fire. Go through them. Yeah. And then we want to talk about one in particular.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, obviously, before we, started recording today. So, I'm rewriting a pilot, writing the feature version of my AFI thesis film. I'm writing a book. I just signed a contract this week with a publisher.
Woohoo.
Tell everyone the title, because I think it's
right now it's just Manifest It, Bitch.
So it's like a great title.
Yeah, it's a humorous spiritual book. And then lastly, I've been performing stand-up at the Comedy Store for this show called Comedy Madness that they do every so often.
And you've been told there may be some streaming opportunities with the show?
Yeah. So I've been told through the producer that they might be recording and using it for streaming purposes on, one of the streaming platforms.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've had really great guests because, last time we had Todd Barry, who has a Netflix special. I think it's called Spicy Honey or something like that. And then we had Bill Burr on one time. Harlan Williams. So we've had really big comedians at this show. So it's kind of nerve-wracking.
Okay. Well, first I want to ask you about the stand-up, and then I want to get back to the irons in the fire.
Okay.
To me, doing stand-up has to be the scariest thing on the planet. We had an ongoing discussion of, if someone gave you $100,000, would you do 10 minutes at the Comedy Store? And I was like, no way would I do that.
I would, for
and
the record.
You said you would. Yeah. And obviously, Mary's doing it for much less than $100,000. I want to hear about you did stand up in college.
Yeah.
So you've done it before. Uh-huh. But I want to hear just about the process and how, is it terrifying? What's it like? Because I think it's a fascinating thing, especially for someone who's just starting out.
Yeah. Well, first off, I really got into it because I would just look at things differently. I think a lot of people look at things like what is, they'll look at the world like what is. But stand-up comedians, their mindset is more like why, It's like really digging deep into small things like going to the grocery store and seeing some wacky person and why is that person wacky? Mm-hmm. Why is that person like that? It's like someone told me it's like that Chris Rock joke where he's like, that look that woman gives you and she looks like she wants to kill you? It's because you weren't her first choice. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like he's looking at why does mm-hmm. that woman give you that look?
That's funny.
And yeah, that's really how I got into it. And I did it in college, performed. And really, this is the thing. You really have to commit. When you write these jokes and you memorize them, you have to commit to them because you can tell when someone doesn't commit to saying them out loud. And the worst thing that can happen is they don't laugh. And you know what? Like, you had a good time. They didn't have a good time. So there you go. Like,
it's but amazing to me that you say you had a good time, because to me, that sounds like the worst time I could possibly imagine is like bombing.
Like 80 people looking at you and not laughing.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds horrible. But you just go out there. You're not. Are you nervous? Like, do your hands shake? Does your voice shake?
Yeah, I get super nervous. But what helps is I'll be waiting in the green room with other comedians, and you can tell all the other comedians are nervous too.
Mm-hmm.
And you just chat with them, you know, and that helps calm everything down, you know, talk about what they do and their experience. And then that just kind of calms you down, because you realize that everyone's nervous. And the audience is nervous too, because unlike improv, you're up there by yourself. So the audience wants you to be funny.
They want you to succeed.
Yeah, they don't want to cringe. No one wants to be in the audience cringing. I've definitely had that experience being in the audience, and I feel bad. I don't want, you know, so fingers crossed, knock on wood, I've never had like a total, like, no one laughed situation. Okay. So
good. Well, hope you won't ever have that.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I really admire you putting yourself out there. I think that's just one of the hardest things I could imagine doing. I mean, I'd rather like jump out of a plane, you know, like skydive.
I think memorizing is actually the hardest part for me.
Oh, interesting.
Because you have to memorize the jokes, but not in a way that sounds rehearsed.
Right. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So many skills being developed. You know, we had another question about it, which is because we're talking about irons in the fire and how it's good to have a lot of irons in the fire. Sometimes with you, we wonder, do you have so many irons in the fire that could there be a lack of focus, or do you feel like all of your irons are leading to one thing?
Yeah, I do think they're all leading to one thing. And I have to mention the feature version of my thesis film I'm writing with someone else.
Mm.
So that kind of helps, because he also wants to produce it independently.
Mm,
so there is like, okay, we want to find financing. We want to like, and I'm like, okay. I'll let you do that part, but we're also writing it together. So that helps. But yeah, I think honestly, my ultimate goal, because I've been thinking about this, is to eventually have my own sitcom. And I know that's a long road, and I know it's a difficult road. But I think through stand-up, you know, maybe another writer or producer or agent loves the jokes and helps me get into a comedy room. And I've also heard that comedy rooms are notoriously difficult, you know, like people talking over each other, a lot of other stand-up comedians in the room. So doing it, you know, makes me feel more confident and help with my social anxiety, because I do have social anxiety, even though I don't seem like it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense. I mean, because I think it is really hard to be in a comedy room, much harder to be in than a drama room, because there's a performance element. Like, whoever's joke lands the best in the room will be the joke that ends up in the script, at least for now. Seems like they always change, like, when they're filming. So that performance element could really help you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is performing stand-up, it's an immediate response. They either like it or they don't. And you don't get that from other things. Like, I could be at home writing these jokes all by myself, but I don't have... I mean, I just have my boyfriend, and he has a different sense of humor than the rest of the world, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just that immediate response that helps you figure out, oh, that's what it is, you know?
Wow. So I just want to point out that Mary's doing all these things while having a low-paying full-time job. So if she can do it, you guys can do it.
Absolutely. And we should point out that many, many comedy writers start out in stand-up. People like Larry David, Jen Kirkman, John Mulaney, Ali Wong, Bo Burnham, Jordan Peele.
Yeah. And now Jordan's writing horror movies. Yeah. A little different, but.
you would love to have any one of those careers.
Oh, yeah. Especially Larry David, because, I mean, my cat's name is Larry David. So
yes.
Obviously. There's a little bit of an obsession, not going to lie.
And Mary, people can actually, if they're in LA, go see your stand-up. When is your next gig?
It's a Monday night, February 11th at 8 p.m. in the Belly Room.
The Comedy Store.
At the Comedy Store.
And where can people follow you to get more of your upcoming dates?
Yeah, I always post them on my Instagram, at Mary Merkdog, M-E-R-K-D-O-G.
At Mary Merkdog.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Go see Mary, everybody. She needs your support.
Yeah.
Laugh hard.
And yes, and for God's sake, laugh.
Yeah.
Okay, next up, we have an artsy Hollywood hack, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And now, Sarah, it is time for this week's Hollywood hack, and this comes from you. It's commission a piece of art. You did this.
I did. A couple years ago, when I sort of started getting serious about my health, I'm more than a couple now, my doctor said to me, "How motivated are you?" And that just sort of crystallized a lot of things for me. And I felt like, okay, I need that. How motivated are you? Somewhere where I can always see it. And we happen to know an artist named Amy Smith, who does these really cool kind of collage pieces of art with words on them. She does a lot of other amazing stuff too. But I thought, okay, I should call Amy and say, can you make something for me with "How motivated are you" on it? And I knew I wanted it to be like a big piece of art on my bathroom wall that I would see in the mirror. So I asked her to put "How motivated are you" backwards.
I love that.
On the art, so it looks right in the mirror, since that's how I see it most of the time. And I love it. I see it, obviously, every day, many times a day. And it really keeps me focused and inspired. And it's also, I just think it's a really cool piece of art. And now art is just so accessible. Like, you can actually have something commissioned and not spend $40,000. You can go to Etsy and do this.
Yeah. And Amy did such an amazing job. We'll have the picture on our website so people can actually see yours. How motivated are you? And everybody, we will link to Amy Smith's website so you can see her work. And Sarah, I've noticed on Etsy that you can also have a needlepoint pillow commissioned with something on it. So maybe that's what I should do.
There you go.
Explode on a needlepoint pillow. Okay, Sarah, it is time for this week's celebrity sighting. And I have to say, this isn't someone that either of us actually saw, but it was such a big A-list sighting that we had to bring it up. And I was actually there. I just didn't see the person, but
right.
I was in the vicinity. So a few weeks ago, we did a recording session, or I should say our composer, Greg Trippi, did a recording session at Jim Henson Studios to do music for the finale of season one of The Fix, which was amazing.
And it's the same studio where We Are the World was recorded,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, the exact room where they did We Are the World is where we were recording. So that was super cool. Anyway, there are, of course, other studios there. It's not just one. It's like a whole building with various recording studios. And Brad Katz, our editor, went to the bathroom, and when he was washing his hands, he looked over, and there was John Mayer. John Mayer was in the building recording at the exact same time that we were recording. And John Mayer, I think, said hello, you know, as one does.
Not that we have a lot of experience in men's bathrooms.
And then I must say I was sort of skulking around the hallways, hoping that John Mayer would emerge from his studio and I would see him. But he did not emerge, at least not when I was walking around.
Aww.
But, you know, it was still very exciting.
You were like two ships passing in the recording studio night.
We were. It was very exciting. So, I mean, you know, John Mayer, like, that's as Hollywood as it gets.
Yeah.
And that's it for this episode of Happier in Hollywood. Email us or send us a voice memo to happierinhollywood@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. And please, for the love of God, subscribe if you haven't already.
Thank you to our executive producer, the amazing Chuck Reed, and everyone at Sancola Sound. You can follow them on Instagram at Sancola Sound. And thank you to everyone at Cadence 13.
Thank you to our assistant, Mary Merkins, for letting us deconstruct her career ambitions. You can follow Mary on Instagram at Mary Merkdog. And do go see her perform stand-up if you're in Los Angeles.
And as always, thank you to Gretchen Rubin. Happier in Hollywood is part of the Onward Project.
Get in touch. I'm on Instagram at Liz Craft and Sarah is at S Fain. We also have a Facebook group. Search for Happier in Hollywood on Facebook to join the conversation.
And to see our new logo.
Yes.
Yay. Until next week, I'm Sarah Fain.
And I'm Liz Craft. Thanks for joining us. It's a fun job.
And we enjoy it. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer. Producer? I'm Sarah.
Producer.
Okay. I'm Sarah Fain, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And with me is my high school friend and writing partner of 19 years, Liz.
You want to take that last sentence again?
Now I have the giggles.
From the Onward Project.